Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 269 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson, and as always, it takes two to 69. Here's my co-host, Jason Rugard. He's got a rundown for us.
The mental picture of that is just...
Did you like that?
It is. It really, I was like clever. Okay, so we're moving on to the box office ace. Got the Get Hard, because we're 269 tonight. And we have Home, where you can get hard. Moving on to the reviews. We have a shitload of reviews today. We're talking about Run All Night, The Seventh Son, Birdman, Life Itself, The Factory, and a slew of others. We've got some great trailers to talk about. Maggie, Mission Impossible 5. We have Entourage and The Water Diviner. But as always, like we do, let's get into this box office ace prediction game.
It's not a question of enough, pal. It's a zero-sum game. Somebody wins, somebody loses.
Let's play the HSX.com box office prediction game.
Okay.
You hit week on Gunman, which bombed. I mean, that thing opened up in the low fives, and you hit that right on the head, didn't you?
I said five.
Yeah, I think I said six, seven, somewhere in that range, and slightly off there. But really, the big story of last weekend was Insurgent not surging ahead and beating the first one's numbers, but still a solid opening. I mean, shouldn't be overlooked. A $54 million opening for a young adult novel is still
that
a franchise.
The first one, if that's... Well, the first one did 53.
Or 52. I'm sorry, okay, this was 52. Yeah, it's still, though, it's a solid opening.
Yeah, it's a great opening. I guess the only thing way to take this is that they didn't bring in any new viewers, right? Which is fine and makes sense, I guess. I thought they would have brought in a little bit more.
It didn't grow, but it didn't shrink. So there is a consistency there. I mean, it opened up bigger than The Maze Runner, which is getting a sequel. Mm-hmm. It opened up far bigger than any other wannabe franchises like Beautiful Creatures. And you can name about a dozen of those, The Giver, sure, and things like that. So still very solid. But will it have that 3x multiplier and get to 150 that is sought after like the first one did? Now that's going to be a little challenging. But even if it hits 120, that's still a solid for a second entry, I think.
You think all you want.
I'm trying to think very hard over here. and next we have this week coming up. We have Get Hard, which is a hard one for me to predict because Will Ferrell was out there, with all the baseball teams last week. He was really stumping, and I thought it was clever that he was out there, not really promoting the movie, but kind of doing it for charities. Did you see this when he was playing with all the different baseball teams in one day?
No.
It was a great publicity stunt.
I can't follow Will Ferrell's publicity stunts because he's all over the damn place. Everywhere, well, every time, every day, whether it's for a movie or not, he shows up.
I like the guy for doing shit like that. And he is sports oriented.
He still does Ron Burgundy things to this day.
It's true. I mean, the guy's been in a lot of sports comedies if you think about it.
He actually has, yeah.
However, he played an inning, played basically every position with nine different teams throughout a day in spring training, including the Oakland Athletics, the Dodgers, everybody. And it was somewhat comical, but he batted, he caught, he pitched, he did the whole thing. So he raised a bunch of money for charity, but in doing so, he raised awareness for a movie because people were saying, well, what's he promoting? And someone said, a movie he's got coming out, and then they would show during SportsCenter, all the previews. So there was a lot of awareness raised like that. Now, does that translate to movie tickets sold? Maybe not. But at the same time, profile-wise, through the roof. But I thought this, too, when Anchorman 2 was coming out, and that kind of had a muted opening. So I don't know where to go with this movie is what I'm saying.
Well, yeah, it's a good question.
And is Kevin Hart the bigger draw at this point?
Do we need to know what the bar is set at?
What is the bar on this thing?
The bar is set at freaking $30 million.
I thought you were going to say $40 million, because I've heard on the high end $45 million for this.
Guesses maybe at that high, but that's not what the bar set at.
Okay,
so you said 30 is big for Get Hard, which, I'm unsure about, so I don't know.
I'm very unsure about this, and everyone seems to think this is a home run, so where are you going? Because you sounded incredulous at that $30 million bar.
I do. I don't think it quite... Oh, I'm going to eat shit for this, but I'm going to say that it doesn't make 30. I'm going to say 28.
I'm going to go 31 because I'm going to guess a little over. This is probably going to open up at 18 because I'm doing this. You know, if this opens up in a shit position, first of all, I don't think this looks very funny. I don't think this is like a good movie at all. And I like both these guys, and I usually follow them.
I think it looks like something that goes straight to video.
I could see this opening the range of Let's Be Cops.
But that's what I thought about The Wedding, whatever.
I like The Wedding Ringer quite a bit.
Wedding Ringer. Yeah, but it still looked, it had that look and that feel of something that goes straight to video.
Yeah, it was still funny, though. And that's all that counts in a comedy, because okay, word of mouth spreads that. Funny. Yeah, but if the word of mouth kills this, I mean, the people are already backlashing against this because they say it's homophobic or racist in spots. I mean, but
okay, so you think, I mean, The Wedding Ringer opened it at 20. So you think that Will Ferrell's got like another 10 in him?
I say 31 just because that's basically what Step Brothers opened up with. And I think that this is on the level of awareness
that was on, I don't know. All right.
I didn't go 35, which is we'll like the see. Other guys and things like that. So, I mean, there's been some hefty ones.
I hope it does well. I mean,
now what is Home? Because I feel like this just snuck onto the release chart. This was a DreamWorks shit.
This has not stuck onto the release charts. This has been all over the place because DreamWorks has had nothing but trouble, as we know, opening movies, making any money.
Trouble at home.
So yeah, this is a movie that got pushed around. Actually, a lot of their schedule has been pushed around, and movies have been pushed off and whatnot. But this one's finally coming out. They badly need it to be a hit. They have not had a really big hit in a long time. The last movie, Penguins of Madagascar, which would have had more pull than Home, I would think, opened to $25 million. We got the bar set on this one at 25. What do you think?
I think that's a solid bar. I was going to go 24 on this one.
So you're going to go 24.
I think it goes right under that bar.
Well, then I will... I'll go 22.
Yeah, convince yourself. There you go.
I do. I know. I almost wanted to go 28 just to be the same for both movies.
Well, there you go. It's a tie for first. That'll happen.
I gotta go 22.
It's like betting on both guys in a fight. You know what I mean? You're backing yourself up there. One way or another. It's a wash. Okay, so as always, go to Box Office Ace and get in this fight. See if you can outguess Trevor and I, and I'm sure you can because right now most everybody's outguessing me. So I really need these movies to do exactly.
Remember, what was that one with The Rock? Planet 51, right?
That was dog shit.
It was, but Home. Have you seen a trailer for Home?
No, I didn't even know it was coming out.
Reminds me a lot of Planet 51.
Planet 51. I mean, that had no marketing behind it. I think that opened up like $13 million. That was nothing.
Yeah, I mean, that. Fair enough. And it was what it was. But this movie just reminds me of that.
There's also been nothing in the marketplace for kids, small kids, for quite a while. So parents are looking for shit to take their kids to.
I don't know if that means that they're just going to shell out money to go to the theater for whatever.
I never underestimate the kid movies. I really don't. They always
do. You should, because a lot of them do nothing. So.
Well, since Turbo, I feel like there's been a downturn with DreamWorks. I mean, that was been a while back.
Oh, yeah, but that was a long time ago. They've been having trouble because of their movies aren't very good. So that's kind of my point here is that, I mean, maybe don't underestimate it, but certainly.
I'll be curious to see.
I'd be really surprised if this did over 30. It would be mind-blowing.
We'll see when Pixar's Inside Out comes out, what kind of, you know, if they're still a player in the game, because that looks clever, and I think that looks like it's going to be a huge hit for them.
Of course it is, but it's very different, so of course people are going to go see it, because they're playing to a broader audience than just kids.
Yeah, it's smart. Yeah, which is a smarter play.
All right,
let's move on.
What else we got?
What else do we have? Let's move on.
You have no trivia, right?
I have trivia, but it's not like it's not great trivia here. But all right, we'll give you the trivia. I'll give you my toilet trivia here. How about
oh,
that?
Oh, God.
Okay.
I don't want to guess. I got to guess what size and shape?
No, Doc, what's this growing on my inner thigh? Is that a rash? Is it a mole? What is that? That would be good. What's the highest or grossing rated R movie? Do you know this?
No.
I keep forgetting this. And Matrix? Then I remind myself. And I don't mean unadjusted. I mean unadjusted dollars. What is the highest grossing rated R?
The Matrix ones was for a while. What is it? Hangover? What is it?
It's The Passion of the Christ.
Oh, that is hard to remember that.
Right?
But yeah, sure.
But you're right about the Matrix having, you know, that it had the highest grossing, you know, opening weekend. I think it might even still have that for a while for Radar movie. But yeah, I was looking at that and I'm like, shit, I always forget because that, you know, almost sense. Like it's such a special event movie in a lot of ways, you know, that you forget that it has.
I just don't think of a rating really that goes with that. You know, although R would be a thing, that was a kind of a big deal at the time, but it just never hit me because seemed like it needed that.
All right, so I don't know if you read this or not, but Vin Diesel was talking with Variety this week, and he basically said that Furious 7 is so moving and has been touching audience members and is such a crowd pleaser that he predicts it's going to be in the hunt for Best Picture next year. And is that outlandish, or is that what the Best Pictures are supposed to do? Is it supposed to include the populace?
Well, it's not going
to
happen, right? We already know that.
Right, okay.
Might it be up for Best Picture? Well, that's a possibility. Will it win? No. He's saying it's going to win, right?
No, I mean, is that what he was saying? I thought...
Or is he just saying it's going to be up?
He did say win, but I mean, a nomination for something like this would be an achievement.
Would be the win for it, really.
You look at, you know, popular movies with great critic ratings last year, and you have Captain America, Guardians of the Galaxy, things like that, which were not even in the conversation for Best Picture, which... It defeats the purpose, I think, in a lot of ways, which goes back to the old chicken and the egg here conversation with the Best Picture category. Is what's the point of it to have, you know, all these movies that nobody has seen? You know, when I said to my friend who has a passing interest in movies, are you going to watch the Oscars? And he says, it's another year of people talking about movies that nobody's seen. And outside of American Sniper, you can say that. That was pretty accurate. So after all the declining ratings, it'd be great to see them nominate something that was popular with audiences and was liked by critics. I'm not just saying nominate Ninja Turtles, but I'm saying nominate something that is both.
But it doesn't have to be. Right?
But the thing is, doesn't it make you want to see it because all this great pre-buzz? Because it is getting fantastic.
Yeah, it's had huge buzz. And everything that he's been saying has been nothing but reiterated by everyone here, you know, all over the place. And everyone said that they handled the Paul Walker stuff just the best that they possibly ever could have. And, you know, learning that they've been actually lifting old shots, unused footage from old movies and putting them into this, you know, and compositing them into this movie essentially so that they are a part of this movie. They aren't just shots from the old movies. Is just makes me want to see it even more. It makes me think, yeah, that there's actually going to be a real Paul Walker performance in this.
You know what's interesting too is I read that Justin Lin, the director, or I'm sorry, not Justin Lin, James Wan, the director, the new director, he said that he didn't want to specifically talk about what shots yet were what because he didn't want people focusing on that, which I think is very interesting because I don't want to focus on that when I watch this movie, especially if it's chase scene and action scene.
But
I'd rather
what we're
just
hearing,
not,
you're not going to, right?
Yeah, which is great. I'm sure there's going to be one or two obvious moments for what, you know, if it's a hiding shot or for whatever it may be. But if the death scene or whatever it is, however they send him off in his glory, is done well as everyone is saying. I mean, this really might be a tearjerker, crowd pleaser, massive hit. And Diesel's also saying that he thinks this could be the highest grossing movie. I think he means unadjusted. Let's be honest, it's not going to be E.T. or Jurassic Park in unadjusted dollars, or unadjusted dollars. But he's saying this could be the highest grossing.
Your audio's messing up.
Oh, is it? Am I back?
Oh no, you're back.
Oh, hi. Thank you. That was
right. So you're saying it's not going to be the highest adjusted, but or if adjusted, it obviously wouldn't beat.
Right.
Older
but it
movies.
Could.
But that makes sense because I don't.
It could get to that 300 million milestone. I mean, that'd be outrageous.
Sure, that's a possibility but with the whole Paul Walker thing. I mean, I know that it was obviously him, Vin Diesel naming his kid Pauline, which is not a publicity stunt, but. It kind of equals out to be one really when that stuff kind of stuff gets released, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, unbelievable. This thing is, I would never think that this movie could have rebounded in the fashion that it has because you think a troubled production and a death of a star in the seventh movie in a franchise, they're rewriting things on the fly at some points. And just, you got to give it up to them if what they pulled off is what they pulled off because I didn't think they could do it. and from what I'm reading here, and I don't want to read too many things early on in here because I want to experience it. But
it does make you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's the longest in the series too. 2 hours and 17 minutes. So but I hope it has a reason for that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It would be if the Dark Knight couldn't get the nomination. Do you really think this is could possibly do it?
If this is the year, though, because they have declining ratings at the Oscars the last 3 years, this would be the year that they would try.
But they don't have control over that.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, unless they change the rules in order to be able to be sure that they could do it, they don't have control of the vote, right? So I don't know.
I just think that
this one make a difference. I mean, he's definitely. I don't know if you look at the Academy Awards people, they probably would like him better than Heath Ledger. I don't know. Kind of be my guess a little bit.
If you look at the Fast and Furious franchise now, it's clear that 5, 6, and 7 are part of their own entity because you have The Rock that's brought in. But where does 4 lie? Where does the one that they just call – is that –
the in-betweener.
It really is, right? It's the stage that they were kind of feeling it out again and saw if there was audience interest, and there was. I think that's a great one. I think it's kind of the forgotten one in all of this is because the oddly titled –
the third one Fast is really the best one and – it's the entire reason that we have a 7. So,
I think the third one is very good.
As much as everyone makes fun of
it. But you got to pull it out of context in a lot of ways. But apparently, this one addresses the third one and specifically. This
I
is
think
the, first
the third
one,
one is so good to be put back in context is because it's so limited by what it was able to do. Yet somehow they were able to make a complete Fast and Furious movie.
First, right?
there were no tanks.
The first one's so good, though. The first one brought you
into that
world.
The first one is very good, I know.
Man, come on. The first one is good. The second one is the only one that is outright bad.
The second one sucks.
It really is just outright bad. It makes – there's nothing that lasts from that other than the presence of Tyrese and Ludacris. It's the only thing they took from that. That whole – that was just a bad Miami Vice type.
What do you think about Tyrese maybe being Green Lantern?
Great. I like Tyrese. I think he should get it. He's too. A great screen presence. I would love to see him in something like that. Why not?
And I feel that would be – he would be good as Green Lantern just because the comedy is fine with him. You know, they could do some quips here and there, and the movie can be funny, but at least it'll be a little more serious, it feels like.
I'm just glad that they're giving him a real franchise, and they're not doing like what they did to Dwayne Johnson and giving him Black Adam or Shazam or something fucking offbeat. You know, I'm glad it's a real character. Because that at least has a chance to succeed and not just be some offshoot. And, you know, we were talking about the Deadpool movie, or I was talking about it with a friend, and he's a huge Deadpool fan, his favorite comic book character, and he's all excited because Ryan Reynolds, you know, is just, he's really stumping for this movie, and then it kind of trickles out that it's going to be a PG-13 movie, and my buddy's upset about it. I said, look, there's going to never be a rated R superhero movie that does well. The only one that ever did well was Blade. And really, that's by luck. That's because of the zombie thing. People don't really think of that.
It didn't necessarily. You're talking about Blade 2?
I'm talking about Blade 1 and Blade 2. I mean, they pretty much sold the same amount of tickets.
Yeah, I know. But if I were to say any of them did well, it would be Blade 2. I don't know that Blade really earned such a big name amongst...
What other rated R comic book movie can you think of that did that well, gross-wise?
I don't know, but how many of them have there been?
There's been a few. I mean, they've tried.
Yeah,
Punisher,
a few, but there's been nothing compared to the PG-13 ones.
Right. This is why it's going to be PG. That's what I was arguing with him. I said, you know, that's why it's going to be like that. And he's all pissed off because, well, Deadpool's not supposed to be like that. If there's ever going to be a character you're going to make. There's no pleasing fanboys. There really isn't.
I'm trying to make the same point you are. I'm sorry.
There you go.
Because Blade, I still don't see Blade or Blade 2. Blade 2, I think, is a huge success just because it's so fucking good. If you sit anyone down and make them watch it, they'll shut their mouths about if they don't like Blade or not. But other than that, I don't, you know, it's not really.
That was aggressive. I feel like if you're going to make them watch, they're going to be hogtied.
They are, man. Sit down and watch Blade 2, guys.
Just put the lotion in the basket.
This is a great movie.
Do you recall... By the way, this is a bit off topic. Do you recall when we were in film school and our film school flooded because they were having massive floods in the Los Angeles area? Do you recall that?
Yeah.
And we had to take lessons at like a hotel, it's a Marriott or a Hilton lobby for a while. You recall this again?
Kind of, yeah.
Okay, so there was a day when you and I caught lunch And we went to an In-N-Out burger, and we went inside the joint where we're eating burgers there. Wow. And or a burger, I shouldn't say burger, as I sound like the fucking guy in Popeye running around eating burgers all day. Anyways, we're sitting there talking, and I'm looking at the guy who's sitting across your shoulder behind you, and he's looking up at me, and we make eye contact, and he pulls his trucker hat down, and it's the actor Ted Levine, who literally is the "it puts the lotion in the basket" guy. Yeah. From Silence of the Lambs, and he pulls his hat down like he doesn't want to be seen. And I'm like, "Hey, listen here, dickhead, get the fuck out of here. Enjoy." And we're talking about Fast and the Furious, and he is in Fast and the Furious 1. You can't remember where he'd, you know, got to bring down Toretto, Dominic. John Newbern. But do you recall this? Do you recall seeing that guy?
Yeah.
Do you remember how eerie he looks in real life as well?
Well, sure.
I mean, that motherfucker is fit to play a serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just remember if you recall seeing Ted Levine in an Out Burger, giving us the I don't look at me star treatment, but having no one around him giving a shit. Do you recall this?
I do. I don't remember. Did he get animal style?
No, but I mean, that's great to think of. I mean, because he is into poodles from what I remember.
You know, all right.
He was well lotioned.
I'm sure he was.
So I had a question I asked you off
you
air.
Did?
I did. And let's talk about it on air for a second here, because right. I was watching a behind the scenes deal, and they're always talking about these guys that are quote unquote too fast for the camera. You know, we had to slow Jet Li's movements down. We had to slow Wesley down. We had to slow so-and-so down because they just moved too fast for the camera. We can't pick them up. And I said, is this bullshit or what? Like, what's the deal with that? And what is the deal with that? Is that true? Are they really moving that fast? The camera can't pick it up?
Well, I mean, they're moving so fast that you can't pick up a lot of the shit yourself when you watch them. Right? I mean, it's so fast, it's not going to register with you. So I don't know if it's not an issue of the camera or not, but there's no way you're going to watch a fight scene at full speed and probably really enjoy it.
Well, I know they open up things. For example, you wouldn't throw a punch. You know, a boxer throws a punch a lot different than a guy on screen.
You'd almost never fight the way they do on screen.
100%.
But they do all that stuff, for you. So you can see a guy threw a punch, a guy threw a kick, a guy did this or that. You know, in any real fight, yeah, they're not going to be probably so open. But they can move faster, right? I mean, the camera's pretty fucking slow. But time is slow. I mean, how fast does it take for these people to throw punches and stuff? They're pretty damn quick.
Right.
You know, not even them, actually. It would be just some, you know, any person who does martial arts is probably too fast, really.
The Bourne Identity style, or actually the Bourne Supremacy is really when I noticed it the first time over 10 years ago now, is that style of cutting and rapid movement. It really doesn't matter anyways. I mean, they could just sit there.
If
like,
you do that, yeah, but those are, I don't know. Yeah, you're right. I don't know. I mean, I've heard this for a long time. I think it's just an issue of stage fighting, really.
I thought it was just them blowing smoke up the star's ass.
It probably, but it's not them in particular, right? It's not like Jet Li's the only person. Even though they say that he's got his name Jet because he's fast like a jet, you know, that's all kind of BS because it's almost anyone or any fight scene really can be too fast.
Is that how he got his name? I thought he was a huge fan of the Jetta.
he's a big Jets fan.
My whole idea of him changed. I thought he was a peace-loving German hippie.
The way I heard it was he's fast like a jet, but I don't know. Because his name's not Jet Li, you know, obviously. It's not his name.
He's changed his name to G5 next. His item down here. All right, let's move on. That was our little debate topic for today. So we had a...
Was it a debate?
It wasn't much of a debate, was it? A little conversation there. Though. But the news has been such...
Damn it, Jet Li is fast!
I mean, outside of Idris Elba being possibly the next Star Trek villain, it's
what
like...
What is he next now? James Bond, Star Trek?
Well, he's... This is what we talked about future casting, you know, with River Phoenix
thing. He's in Fast and Furious 8 now?
Why not?
What else is he in?
Are they planning one after that? I mean, obviously, if the grosses are $300 million,
hell
they're going
yeah, sure. I think they're planning one right now.
Why not? These fuckers are going to 10.
Yeah, you think that? Yeah, I don't think that they're derailed at all on pushing forward.
The absolute truth is that the broadness of the appeal of those movies, between age, gender, ethnicity, because of the stars and the you know everything behind it, is massive. I mean, you bring the wrestling fans, you bring the Vin Diesel crowd, Tyrese has a following, Ludacris has a following, the story, the movies themselves have a following. It's unbelievable. He's the crossover.
Everyone has a following, I guess.
Well, just the crossover appeal of all these performers and like the demographics they bring.
It is one of the startling. Last few, aside from a movie we'll talk about, trailers, true action movies that still has, still makes the big bucks.
Huge potential.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back with our reviews for 6 movies today.
Proud member of the LAMB Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
All right, Kristen, I am so excited that you've decided to do a podcast with me, but what are we going to do a podcast about? There's so many other movie podcasts. We got to do something original.
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of Disney movies. What about something like that?
That's just kids' stuff. What do we want to do that for?
Did you know that The Avengers is a Disney movie? Or that Pulp Fiction is a Disney movie?
Pulp Fiction is not a Disney movie.
It's technically owned by Miramax, which is part of Disney.
We are still going to talk about the Disney animated movies, though, right?
I thought you said that was kid stuff.
Well, you know, I've got 2 kids. I got to be a good dad and stuff.
So be sure to subscribe to the Walt Sent Me podcast, where we discuss the various subsidiaries of the Walt Disney Studios, including the animated movies.
It's available on iTunes, Podomatic, and wherever you find great podcasts. And I swear, it's not kid stuff.
If they don't review Phantoms and Captain Ron, I'm calling bullshit on that podcast.
Phantoms because of the Miramax thing?
Yep, and Captain Ron.
Does that make Star Wars a Fox movie? I mean, I guess technically it does, right?
Wow. It does.
Hmm.
We know we can play this game
for a while. So they're right. They're right. Those are Disney movies.
Those sons of bitches. All right, let's talk about some reviews.
Oh, let's do it.
I'm interested in, actually, let's start off with your Birdman assessment.
Me? I have one. Well, I guess I have more.
You got a couple.
Birdman. I liked it.
Didn't love it, but you liked it.
I didn't love it because, you know, the problem with Birdman really is that it's pretentious as all hell, and it knows it's trying to be that. It's doing it on purpose, but it never stops. You know, there's no let up in Birdman. So it's
when
like,
did you fall out of love with
it's like,
it?
Good,
was there a point
God.
When you
oh,
loved it?
Oh, from the very beginning, I was just like, oh, Jesus, this is, it knows what it's doing. This is very effective, lovely, but it's too much. that being said, yeah, just in and out with the whole thing. I mean, the acting is superb. So, of course, the exchanges, and that's all this movie is just a series of exchanges between characters. You know, it's good here and there, but this movie's tiring. Well, didn't you find this a little tiring, wearing on you?
It wore on me by the end. Yeah.
I mean, wow. And the beatnik drums and all that stuff was just, it was a bit much, but still, I still liked it. I thought it was pretty good.
I thought Norton was fantastic. I thought Emma Stone was okay. I didn't think she was as good as the rest, but I thought Keaton, I mean,
she wasn't as good as the rest.
Well, I just thought that Keaton was so good and so funny in a lot of ways. I mean, when he's talking about the guy
here and there, man, but I mean, he's got some serious downs in this fucking movie too.
Yeah, but the thing is, tell me the scene when he's talking about the critic, that with the New York Times critic. That's a great scene. Uh-huh. Even when Norton has a scene with her. Those are very well written scenes, and I agree with you that it calls attention. It basically it's doing a lot of what it's also condemning.
Yes, exactly.
So I but
it's showing you the opposite side of the argument by giving you just the one side of the argument, which is weird to say, but that's exactly what it's doing.
I thought it was very clever in a lot of ways, but you're right. When he's sitting there floating, and there's a lot of shit that's unexplainable, and it's in there just to be different and weird.
Well, they don't use it either. Right, I mean, they don't use any of that stuff, really, to any great extent in the movie. Right? I mean, one of the things, and again, one of the things this movie does is it plays with that. Right? It's like, oh, he's imagining things. Oh no, he's not. oh, yes, he is. Oh, no, he's not. And there's no way to back it up, right? There's no way to prove either way, except maybe if you want to ground it in the very last scene, maybe. But even then, they've already proven before that it's not true, right?
Right.
So that's kind of this whole movie is like that. You know, it's hard to – there's you can't get a grasp on this movie because they don't let you.
It doesn't want to be found out. Yes, it doesn't want to be figured out. It wants to remain an enigma. Which is a problem with that movie, which took away a little bit for me because of that beginning. I kept trying to figure out why he was levitating.
Did you ever see Altman's last movie, The Prairie Home Companion?
No, I didn't.
No, it's very similar to this.
Which was about death, you know, which is in a lot of ways.
Very weird, but all about, you know, the show, them doing a show and just running around and talking to different people and stuff. It's a musical.
Let me ask you, did the movie lose you? Very similar. Did it lose you when he was locked out of his dressing room? Because I didn't know
what... No, I thought that was funny, though.
I didn't know what... I thought, why?
You mean when he was locked out of the... When he walked outside
and had
the
cigarette? When he had to go through Times Square. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I thought, why put him through that? But why? For what? Like, they kept putting this man... They kept trying to get this man naked and down...
Oh, he's an asshole through the whole movie, though. I mean, name one character in that movie that's likable. None of them.
None of them, yeah.
It's a rough movie, I think, really. But the statements that they're making back up everything for it. So how can you – it's like you find yourself just arguing with yourself about this movie, you know? Like, you can't make a point because it's all over the place.
Beautiful
on purpose,
filmmaking
though. So
style,
how do you
though.
Fucking deal with that? I don't know, yeah.
The way they cut around to make it look like it's a continuous shot, very, very beautiful.
Yeah, very fun, very cool. And that in and of itself, you know, that's one of the things, right? Making it a continuous shot, that's a pretentious fucking thing that people do.
Yeah,
it really is.
Yes, it is. But it did feel like a play in a lot of ways, where these interactions
still.
Between characters, every character had their own scene, you know, to shine and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I really liked the interplay with the Norton character and the fact that he was taking over the spotlight of this person, and the fact that you have the Hulk and Batman in a scene, and they're talking, you know, about these what's it like to be an actor and the trueness of it.
I almost thought right then, when was Eric Bana in this?
Yeah, right, the other Hulk.
Mark Ruffalo, where's he?
The bad Hulk.
No, Edward Norton was fine as a Hulk. It just wasn't, the movie made no sense. I don't know why they made it.
I didn't care for him in that one. Actually, I didn't care for any Hulk iteration yet.
Well, I liked Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah, Mark Ruffalo.
But actually, I mean, Eric Bana was really good as Bruce Banner.
He just was stuck in a bad movie.
Really good. That movie just sucked. That's why I thought about the Edward Norton one, too. Like, he was in it, but they kind of felt like they just made it for whatever reason. But we get off topic now.
We did. Okay.
Birdman, yes. So we both say, I say I like it. I don't, you know, it's all over the place. Hard for me to grasp.
Yeah, but hey, it's smart in ways that I didn't think it was smart. It would be that smart in, but it was also.
But it kind of slaps you across the face with it. You feel a little bad about it, don't you?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Hey, I wouldn't watch it again. All right, what did I see? I saw Run All Night. I saw the Liam Neeson thriller Run All Night with Ed Harris, and this is the latest in the Liam Neeson career resurgence where he's an action hero. And I gotta tell you, this shit's getting a little thin.
I'm upset to hear this.
Yeah, you know, I just
the trailers look so good. It looked almost like a Collateral type movie.
A lot of people like this movie, and it, you know, it's over directed. It's got a lot of those shots which are kind of called the Google Cam, where the camera zooms from one location up across the city into another, and through buildings and walls. And I just thought it was overly stylized. Good.
Is that the only problem? I mean, would this have this been had the hand of Michael Mann on it? Would it have been better?
Yeah, I would say that. The thing is, I don't like this Joel Kinnaman guy either. The guy who played RoboCop, he's playing the same fucking character, tough guy, you know, take no shit asshole that he's played every time he's on screen. And maybe the guy can do something else because people seem to like him from his television show. But and I don't mind his presence, but get a new shtick already. You know what I mean? It's old after a while, and the tough guy antics get really fucking old. But the scenes between Ed Harris and Liam Neeson, I mean, they're almost Shakespearean in the sense that, like, it's tragic. These are best friends from childhood, and now they have to wage war on each other because of things their kids did. And the dialogue between the two men is really the heart of the movie. But outside of that, this is really just a shitty genre exercise with some good scenes between two really good. I mean, really, you watch Neeson and Harris talking to each other on cell phones and delivering this dialogue, which is good in those scenes. And you think, man, you guys deserve better. You really do. You guys could pull this shit off on a stage somewhere. So all it made me do was long for them to be in a better movie. So I give it 2.5 stars. So basically a negative review, but just on the borderline of negative. I wanted to like it. I really did. But I still see it. Yeah, I mean, I recommend you see it if you're a fan of Neeson, but I went in there with some expectations because I really liked to walk on the tombstones, and I thought he was doing some good work lately. And I liked Nonstop, which is the same director.
I hated Nonstop, but...
Yeah, well, maybe you'll like this one.
I thought
one,
Nonstop then. Was overdirected.
Well, if you think Nonstop's overdirected, which
this will be too much.
this is his Tony Scott Man on Fire moment.
Oh boy!
So welcome.
Only a few people can pull that off, you know.
Yeah, and really talk about
no likable characters. Tony Scott didn't do it one time.
Not a likable character on screen in this movie, and I'm tired of seeing. You know, I like Neeson in these roles, but. Mm-hmm. It's becoming – it's a subgenre into itself with Sean Penn trying it out, Kevin Costner.
He falls so easily into it at this point, right? It's no – so there's no
– It's all the same. It's the workaholic father who put everything before his family, who gets the one last chance to prove that he's really a good dad.
But he doesn't drink
really,
in this, does he?
No, he's – yes, he's a fucking drunk.
Of course
he's a
he
broke
is.
Drunk.
That's
yes.
what he does.
Same – I'm telling you, this could be the same – this could be Nonstop Part 2 when a guy gets off the plane and comes home.
Oh, boy.
It basically is that, so – I'm not, it was better than Chappie, which I saw recently, but,
move on. The Seventh Son. Tell me about The Seventh Son, because this movie looks like dog shit.
But I'm giving it a good review, and I told you off air, I'm going to stick by it because I want you to know.
How much better than the Keanu Reeves disaster is this?
Well, I'll tell you how much better. Right. It plays. It's coherent. The Keanu Reeves movie is baffling within the first 6 minutes.
What the hell is the name of that one?
47 Ronin.
47 Ronin.
That movie is baffling in the first 6 minutes,
itself.
And you realize that Keanu Reeves is not even the main character in that movie. This, at least, does not get bogged down in any sort of major mythology. It has a minor mythology it's going through. The guy from Game of Thrones, Kit Harrison, is in the first 10 minutes of this movie. Mm-hmm. Then he's killed off, not to give anything away, but I did. And Jeff Bridges needs a new apprentice, so he goes and finds this young boy. And it's the Star Wars thing where the kid has to leave the farm
like
to go
with Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Pretty much is what I thought about a lot in this movie. I'm glad you said that, because I thought about that. But Jeff Bridges is basically imitating Gandalf in this. It's an Ian McKellen impersonation, down to the speech impersonation. But he swears great. A lot more than McKellen ever did. But it's fun, too, because you got Julianne Moore, who I typically don't like, playing some sort of witch. So you have this weird Big Lebowski reunion. And it's like bizarre.
Do they make a baby in this one?
This is the Jeff. You know what? After Jeff Bridges won that Oscar in Crazy Heart, and I think he was up again for True Grit, he went on like this trilogy of sci-fi.
I think you just
shit.
Don't give a shit after you win an Oscar. I really think that's what happens, right?
Well, yeah, they
it's the only explanation for what happens afterwards.
I mean, you look at his career, you put
The Giver, this, and this together. Lord.
It's a bizarre trilogy in choice of film. But anyways, I actually have to give this. I'd give this thing 3 stars just for entertaining the shit out of me. It's dumb, but it's not insultingly dumb. And if you know the genre and you know
so it sounds
and what I said to you off air is that
at home viewing.
It reminded me that this genre, this fantasy sword and sorcery genre, used to be this B-movie exuberant genre before Lord of the Rings came around and elevated it into this overblown, you know, overcomplicated.
Well, they used
in some
to be,
senses.
Yeah, this genre, especially for me anyways, I don't know, but tell me if this is for you, but this used to be the gym kind of genre where you'd find, where just every movie, you have no expectations for these kind of movies really in this genre because they can be, when they're bad, they're really bad.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, typically they are, but this is just the genre that has so many fucking gems in it.
For every Conan or Beastmaster, you have a Call the Conqueror. You have, you know what I mean? You have the highs and the lows. Mm-hmm. So you got to take what you can get in this genre. But this reminded me of some of those late 80s, early 90s kind of fun little romps. And it's got decent special effects. I don't know really why. Maybe this is a truncated version from what they originally had, but they've cut it down to 100 minutes, an hour and 40 minutes.
I was going to say, Jesus.
Yeah, no, they cut it down to 100 minutes, and it moves and plays fairly well. So I actually recommend this, embarrassingly enough. I'd recommend this much more than Chappie, which is, you know, it was supposed to be the big critical darling of the sci-fi, which didn't happen at all. Moving on, let's talk about Life Itself, this Roger Ebert documentary that you and I both saw this week. What did you think of this thing?
Well, I'd already seen this. I mean, I've already talked about this thing on the show.
Did you? I don't remember talking about this.
I think so. So I'll leave it up to you. The only thing I think I said this before was that it's awfully long-winded and just, you know, the major problem that this has is that it stays in the now too much. And we want to know about the past, especially the TV show is real. I think what everyone really wants to know about. And it makes me long for, and I can't wait, and I hope that this sees the light of day of the actual movie of that.
Right, with that Josh Gad was supposed to star and whatnot. I hope I see that too. I agree with you on that. It's way too much in the present. It's very, it's disheartening and disturbing in a lot of ways to see Ebert and his...
Well, he's just lounging around, though, in the hospital for a lot of it. Which it is, you don't want to say anything bad about that, but really, it's fucking boring, and I don't really need to know it. You know, you get the sense from the beginning, okay, like, I know.
I was ready to move on from that.
It's horrible, but they have huge, long pauses in between telling you the backstory, right, of just him hanging out in the hospital. It's like, oh, boy.
Yeah, I was a little underwhelmed at this. Maybe it's because I wanted to see it so much. Maybe it's because I have such reverence for the guy. I was really under. I told you, you know, is it bad that I feel kind of disappointed in this documentary? I mean, I really wanted to like it. I was waiting for it to tell me something new or show me something new, and it did none of that. There was no exploration. There was no. There was nothing that came out. There was no discovery in this documentary at all, which is surprising because Steve James usually makes really good documentaries. Mm-hmm. Maybe he was too close to the subject this time. I don't know.
I don't think so. I don't think there's much more to tell that we don't already know. You know, I mean, maybe that's our fault for already knowing a lot. Had going into this, maybe not knowing so much, it would have been more interesting. But like I say, what I want to see is I read the things like on Roger Ebert's blog of him talking about him and Siskel, you know, the birth of the internet and realizing that they can make, you know, they can charge people micropayments for money and thinking of this, those are the moments I want to see, you know, recreated. I want to see those moments recreated.
Yeah. Because Ebert was way ahead of his time when it came to
internet
and filing things.
Both in the Siskel as well was super into pushing forward, you know, and the show was... Just, I don't know. I mean, would that show still have been, had the health been better, you know, it's amazing to think that show could have continued on.
100%. That could have been on right now.
And that is nuts. That's, Ebert was 70, to be fair, when he died. So you're getting a little old there. Maybe they would have retired
God willing,
before then.
They could have stayed on.
But they definitely could have stayed on till at least 2010. You know, they could have at least stayed on till then, right? You would have think. That would have been pretty amazing to think that, because in today's world, you know, of podcasting and everything else, it seems like everyone else's voice is getting weaker, but their voices didn't.
Only thing that is sad about that is that they did not, the Tribune did not chronicle Gene Siskel's reviews.
He's got like several thousand reviews from them, and I wish that they would release those in some way that I can get to them.
There's only five or six that are out there that you can really
get. I know. There's several thousand he wrote for them.
Absolutely. And Ebert, on the other hand, you know, he chronicled them in home video format, you know, in his books.
Well, Ebert's legacy will live on, yeah, but he also had a chance to do that, right, in the books and stuff. But now online, he made sure that was set up to RogerEbert.com will continue on even after his death, so... But yeah, I do. I want those statistical reviews.
And I'd like to read those as well.
I want to read them. The Ebert ones are really interesting. I'd love to read the other side of it.
Well, I said to you before, I think that, in my opinion, that Siskel reviewed things from a more emotional standpoint and Ebert reviewed things from a more intellectual standpoint. You know, what he thought about things.
I think in general, but the interesting thing about, I mean, you're right, but it does swap here and there.
Oh yeah,
what I think is really interesting about him. Yeah,
I think Ebert also softens up. You know, I agree with that notion that he softens up later in life on some things and contradicts himself completely on others. Let's move on. Let's talk about The Factory. I think you talked about this one on the air at some point, didn't you?
I talked about this, but this was a while ago because it's been streaming for a long time. So
John Cusack, Jennifer Carpenter thriller. This is on Netflix.
It's your turn. I gave this a fair review, but.
I like
this
one.
You liked it a lot more, I think.
I gave this one 3 out of 4 stars. I like this one a whole lot. I thought the twist ending, which I wouldn't dare give away on it. This is about a serial killer kidnapping prostitutes. And
which twist ending?
Yeah, right. Well, he is trying to impregnate these girls to start his own weird nuclear family. And John Cusack's daughter goes missing. She is eventually kidnapped. It's rediscovered by this serial killer, and that is just the beginning of his troubles. I did like that surprise twist ending. I didn't see that coming. Did you see it coming?
He teams up with you can't. He teams up with Dexter's sister. Yeah,
he does. What do you mean you can't? You think that they don't play it fair?
Well, they don't in this movie. Well, to be fair, I haven't seen this in a while, so maybe talking a little bit out of my ass here. But from what I remember, it was almost impossible to tell. But it was also just too much. Like, who the fuck would even think you... You know, it's unfair to keep going and keep going and then keep going and fucking, it's like, okay, I get it. Wrap your fucking masterpiece up here and let's fucking be done with this.
When the killer's identity is revealed, there's only one line of dialogue that I thought at the very beginning, when the character is introed, that could give it away. About the person's backstory. And I thought, okay, that they said that there, but I was like, wow. That's slight.
That is
That is slight. But hey,
there was a lot
shot.
Of things in this, though. If I'm remembering this correctly, that was pretty, generic would be the word to say.
Well,
he finds the guy, isn't there an exchange that's fairly...
Well, it's all fairly generic. I mean, this whole thing is
straight
out of
the
serial killer
obviously
handbook. I mean, movies like that,
there.
So... But I said this should have come out in 1996.
Which is the perfect time for them because it reminds me of, what was that one? The Numbers? What was that?
Murder by Bullock Numbers.
Numbers. Thank you. Yeah, all those movies, right? This could be
the girls.
Perfectly would fit in just with them. Just great.
Any of that. I thought this stood up to any of that Alex Cross stuff that I'd seen recently, including the titled Alex Cross.
What other stuff?
Any of that kind of shit. You know, these serial killer type stuff. There's been a few of them I've seen.
It is. My only problem with these, with this, and with a lot of the John Cusack ones, is that it feels like because he's picking something of a higher pedigree, they're too focused on the story and not enough focused on the characters. Which is one thing that makes crime, mystery, thriller stuff so good, a lot of times, are the characters.
Well, I said to you that I think he's doing the top tier of the second tier.
He is. I can't ignore that. But like I say, that's... They're too focused on the story, which is something I thought, like True Detective, everyone liked that so much, but they were too focused, I think, on the characters. This to
which
me is too focused on the story.
Yes, you want a happier balance between the two.
Yes, I do.
All right, I was going to say,
like A
I
Walk Amongst the Tombstone, I thought was a perfect balance. The Jesse Stone movies, I still go back to; those are a great balance.
Yeah, I like that Tombstone one. You're right about that. All right, let's move on and talk about the trailers on today's show because I think we got some good ones.
So you say.
So I say, at least.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
Okay, I'm prepared.
I'm prepared to launch here with this Maggie trailer. Boy. Let's talk about Schwarzenegger's entry into...
I'm interested to hear if you liked this or not.
I didn't like this trailer.
I
know you gotta wouldn't. Be honest.
I gotta I tell not... you something. You're so wrong. This movie looks fucking awesome. I cannot wait.
You know, I wanted to like it, and I'm watching it, and I'm thinking, what am I watching here? Why is Schwarzenegger in this? Like, what is the character here? Like, is it his story?
He's
is it the daughter's story?
Well, it's... both.
Whose story is it?
It's both.
Is he supposed to be afraid of the daughter?
Well, she's turning into a zombie.
Or is she turning and she's turning back? I see, that's what I didn't get.
No, she's turning into a zombie, right? The world seems to be settled after the zombie apocalypse. And if you get sick with it, then they take you away, right? They put you into confinement.
Sort of rehab.
I don't know if it's rehab, but they take you the fuck away, right?
Well, I kind of got it. This is like a metaphor for the drug addiction.
There's
or something
some
like
sort
that.
Of a cure. Yeah, there's some sort of a cure, and then and apparently they're trying to find it. I mean, she gets diagnosed or whatever in the trailer, and the doctor says he shouldn't release her, but he does to Schwarzenegger. So there's some sort of, I imagine that it's going to be them trying to find the cure. Right?
There's a couple great shots in this, I'll say that.
I think it's a completely different look on zombie movies, really. I mean, we've never had this end of a zombie movie yet, you know, of the past, the zombie stuff, and now you're just in it.
I'll give you that.
As still people, you know.
It's past that, and we're trying to cure it and that kind of stuff. There is a good jump moment, I thought, or at least a suspenseful moment when he's sleeping on the couch and the daughter comes close to him. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I just was kind of let down by this trailer. I don't know what I was expecting. This is not...
It's going to be a small movie. I think it looks great.
It is a small movie. I mean, I think it starts off like that by saying it's a Tribeca Film Festival entry right at the jump. Sure. You know, they're trying to show you that this isn't your typical...
but there's no reason Schwarzenegger shouldn't, or Abigail Breslin shouldn't be in this.
No, I had no problem with the cast. It's nothing with the casting. It's just the trailer and the film itself didn't grab me.
Well, it plays as half. I will say the trailer and the movie looks like it plays as a little bit more on the action side rather than the horror side, which is why I'm guessing Schwarzenegger is in it.
I just would like to see a more complete trailer, I guess, as opposed to whatever this was.
I think you're either going to want to see this or you're not. You're either going to get it or you're not. It's one of those types of movies. I had a feeling you weren't going to like it because you don't really like this kind of stuff. And I don't know that Schwarzenegger's name being on this hurts it in that sense to some people. If that, you know what I mean? Because maybe you think it's going to be a little different than it is.
This reminded me of Under the Skin. And I didn't see that, but I saw the trailer for that.
That's a good movie to compare this to. Yeah, because like, you have a high-profile actor in it, but it's not a movie that normal—I hate to say normal people.
It's not in their wheelhouse.
You know, yeah, it's going to be something that you're not going to really expect.
Agreed on that. So yeah, I'm split on that. I know you were really hyped on Maggie. I am not so much on this trailer, at least though. But I do look forward to seeing two Schwarzenegger movies this year with that and the Terminator movie. So
hell yeah, the Terminator movie's gonna be good too.
Yes sir, can't wait for that one. All right, let's move on and talk about the Entourage trailer. And this is really the second full-length trailer that we have here. This is the first one was really a teaser trailer in a lot of ways.
I thought was good though, right?
Yeah, but this one expands a little bit more on the story, if not maybe too much is my only complaint here. But man, I want to see this looks great.
Yeah, I mean, this is an expanded trailer, as you say, just from the first one. They kind of just flesh it out a little more. Looks better, right? I can't wait. My only hope now is that the movie is even better than the trailers.
Because the beats are all there. I mean, this thing is cut like this season.
How do they have more beats, right? We said this about the first trailer. The second trailer adds more beats to that perfectly. Just perfectly layered them in. It's astounding, really. This looks like might be one of the better movies of the year, which is weird to say.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
I think it's true.
I thought, well, oh God, they're giving away the cast, they're giving away the cameos. And I'm sure that's probably just scratching the surface though, at this point. Yeah, if you got them, you got to show them. But the thing is, I thought also that the time away from these characters was going to hurt it. But it actually may have strengthened the brain of the show.
I love the idea that he wants to direct now. I mean, this is, everything in this is just so, organic. Exactly. It's just the logical next step.
And the line, I didn't even know he can direct. It's a joke because who can direct? Everybody can direct. You know what I mean? Like, everyone thinks they can direct.
It's the perfect step up from TV show into a movie, isn't it? Really?
Yeah.
Especially
the fact that they have those scenes too. Those scenes against the cops and the riot scenes and things we saw in the first trailer that are integrated into this even a little bit. And I can't wait to see this. I think this is going to be just a fun ride.
For how badly that show kind of fell into it fell apart, if you will, towards the end there. To see it come back together like this is just great.
Yeah, this reminds me of the fun of the first two seasons. Yes. You know? So, which were the best? All right, let's move on and talk about Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, which released its first full trailer this weekend. And this has been moved up from its December release date opposite Star Wars to July 31st. We have the first full trailer, and I was not a fan of the fourth one, neither were you. And
I didn't even get through the fourth one.
This trailer looks pretty fucking good.
This looks great, right? He's basically after the Syndicate.
Which is, I love that kind of right off the bat.
Oh, it's just awesome, right? Exactly. The Syndicate, they're bad. You're like, oh yeah, those are bad guys.
Exactly. They're part of a Syndicate.
Yeah. This is the Rogue Nation. Syndicate is the Rogue Nation of the title.
They're the anti-IMF team.
And yeah, exactly. They're the they're the anti-CIA, the opposite, they're the mirror image of us, only they're bad.
Exactly. They're Mel Gibson and Expendables.
They're going to infiltrate them, right? They've discovered they're real. They're going to infiltrate them and destroy them, hopefully before they, you know, infiltrate and destroy us, which is what it looks like is going on. So very simple idea. Nice little action movie. Looks like he's got some great stunts. These really are, this is what I was mentioning, when you compare this to Fast and Furious, this is kind of the only other action movie out there like this that makes big bucks.
Yeah, I mean, well, the spy franchise, the spy genre has always been fruitful. And this year, you know, we saw The Kingsman's doing well. This should do very well. And I anticipate that Bond will do
more of an action movie. Bond, you're right on that one. Bond's still an action movie. But Kingsman's not so much in a normal a movie, an action movie with big stunts, is it?
Well, would you consider it? The thing is, you look at, Kingsman's an action comedy, and Bond is not a one-man show. This is now going on almost 20 years of Mission Impossible.
When I'm talking about an action movie, you know what I'm talking about, right? When I say an action movie, sure, they make action movies nowadays, but they don't make them like they used to. But there are a few of them they do, and this is like they used to make them.
Well, everybody's got this thing against Cruise. You know, it's funny you say Tom Cruise, and people will go, oh, my God, and groan and moan.
He's so good, movies, they love him. They eat him up.
The guy's movies still make fucking money, and the movies are decent. So, like, I don't get it. You know what I mean? Okay, you can roll your eyes, but at the same time, it's a spy movie. What do you expect? You got Matt Damon running around kicking ass. Same fucking thing. So, long story short, this guy's been doing this for 20 years. It's basically one of these every 4 years. This has turned into the Tom Cruise Olympics. Every 4 years, we get a Mission Impossible movie. He's running around, jumping. It doesn't look like he's fucking aged since 1996. And it's consistent. The look of this thing is consistent with the other things, too. It looks like it could have been shot right after part 4 or part 3, I thought.
Maybe minus 3. I mean, from 3 and beyond, you have to admit, 1 is a completely different beast, and as is 2. This, much like the Fast and Furious franchise, didn't really come into its full franchise potential until the third one.
Which is when they basically started a new trilogy,
Right. You know. Yes. So just as you're saying, yeah, this is most like the third one. But still looks good, right? You admit this looks better than the fourth one.
But I have to complain one thing about the trailer.
All right.
And trailers in general.
I was going to pose this question to you, so go ahead.
I am fucking tired of songs being acapella'd for dramatic effect.
Well, that, of course. Okay, that was the Maggie shit, too, was like, why is it so slow?
I mean, I liked it when Social Network used Creep, and I even thought Dracula Untold when they had Lord doing Somebody Rules the World.
Just play opposites on the music.
They did this in part 4 with some Eminem song as well, which was out of place. And to have the Fugees in there, it kind of dated the movie in a weird way, I thought. I thought, this is weird. So, anyways, what was your complaint?
I didn't get that sense from it, but I'll agree with you on that. I thought the MAGA trailer as well, when they played the music slow, they like to do that, I don't know, slow music to fast, big movies, and somehow they feel like they make them more cinematic important. Important. Yeah, which I don't think always works. Question to you, and there's been a lot of hubbub about this trailer in particular when it came out. Are these big action movies giving away too much of the stunts in them in the trailers? More amazing to see to hold back some of these, like the airplane shit? Hold that back until you go to see. I know it's on the poster. You can't get away from it, but that's what I'm saying. If you hold back on like a major stunt, how much more amazing is that going to be when you see that shit happen on the screen?
I agree, because that's like the old Bond stuff. You know, the guy jumps off the snow mountain and he's got the parachute with the British flag on there. And the Union Jack, and you didn't know that was coming. People went apeshit back in the day.
But how do you generate talk if you're gonna show everything in the trailer, right?
I know they did
Who's
that with
Part 4.
Who's
gonna see the movie and then talk about it afterwards? You've already fucking seen it in the trailer.
They did that with Part 4 when he's climbing the building. I mean, hell, that was the poster for the fourth one. So now this is gonna be the poster for the fifth one. It just they're selling these things on the fact that look, it's really him doing this, which is insane. I mean, that is an insane stunt. I mean, however he's glitched in there, that's an insane fucking stunt. because I saw that and I was like, wow.
It looks uncomfortable to say the least.
To say the least. I mean, his hair is going to match. Good thing he's got good hair, because that thing, if it was Nicolas Cage, that toupee would have been about 30,000 feet. So, I mean, I think really that the trailers are pretty good so far on the show. But the last trailer I want to talk about is the Russell Crowe directed film starring Jai Courtney.
Who's I never heard of that guy.
The water diviner. Is it the divider? Diviner?
Diviner?
Diviner? Did you watch the trailer for this?
He finds, yeah.
I saw this actually in the theater the other night. And I didn't know anything about this, and I'm watching it, and I thought – the one I saw, I don't know if you saw the same, it said nominated for 4 Australian Academy Awards, winner of Best Picture and whatnot.
I don't remember if that was on the one. I just literally just watched it. I don't remember that.
Thought the best part about this was the fact that our boy Jai Courtney's got an Australian accent. What'd you think?
Is Jai Courtney Australian?
I think he might be.
He must be. I mean, this is – obviously, this is the – I don't know, Gallipa, how do you say this fucking thing?
Gallipoli?
Gallipoli, yeah. Yeah, so this is a story about Russell Crowe goes back to find his missing sons. Two are dead, and then he tries to find the third one, which is Mel Gibson, right? No, that's wrong. This is a World War One movie after the war. The Gallipo thing, whatever the hell.
Gallipoli.
It was in Turkey. Yeah, Gallipoli. Australia was there.
Well, they made a movie starring Mel Gibson, you know, obviously.
That was the joke, yeah.
Well, I got it. It was good. I give you credit.
It was one of Muggins' first movies, right? Yeah.
Good movie, too.
It was a good movie. But it was a World War One movie. But this happens after. Well, I don't know. They show the kids during it, so there might be some fighting.
It reminded me.
Really, it's about him going to Turkey, right, and trying to find his kids.
I thought this was Russell Crowe's Legends of the Fall, basically, in Australia.
Yeah, it could be very similar to that.
It looks like it's sweeping.
I think it's a bit too on the nose, the whole water diviner thing. You know, I can find water wherever I go, but you can't find your kids. And then he goes and he finds his kids. I don't know. Why has he got to be a water diviner? How's that going to play into the fucking story?
Well, my friend, you picked up a lot more than I did. I had no clue why this movie was called that. Whatsoever. I watched the same trailer as you. So kudos on that for picking up on the two themes there. But there is a lot of on-the-nose dialogue in this. And... scenes that seem just outright old-fashioned and corny, and just in the trailer, like, you know, wow, I think the woman thrusting herself at him and no and yes, you know, it's like, where the hell did that come from?
It came from Russell Crowe, seems like.
Yeah,
he probably just wanted to make a movie like this, right?
I mean, you think back on the career of Crowe, and has there ever been a guy who was more heralded than fell off quicker? I mean, really. Had about a 3-year span there where they tried to offer him everything, and then due to either his behavior or what, because his performances were solid and they still are, remain to be good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just it has been kind of vanished and banished from the whole system.
He did disappear, you know, more so than a lot of other guys.
And during that time, he was, you know, nominated for LA Confidential and Insider, obviously Gladiator he's good in, and Beautiful Mind and all these movies that you talk about that people have seen and remember him for, but it's one of the things I think nobody wants to work with the guy. The offers start drying up. Do you recall when there was a plot to kidnap Russell Crowe from the Oscars?
Yeah.
That's insane.
That might be a little ridiculous, though.
That is insane. I mean, that's your plot. It's like, during the planning, I'd be like, okay, let me get that again. Let me get that again. We're gonna kidnap Russell
Crowe. Why do you want him?
We're going to get Maximus. I mean, out of all the stars to kidnap, he seemed like he'd be the one to fight back the most. You know, you might want to grab.
Yeah, and he's a hell of a – I mean, even when he's in his fat stage, like, you just know that he's got man strength under that fat. You don't want to go up against that.
He might have retard strength. We don't know.
Yeah, he does. Seriously. Look at him. The dude's got man strength. And if you know anything about man strength, it's deceiving because you're like, oh, that's just some fat guy. No, it's man strength.
Now, that guy's taking off lug nuts with his bare hands. Guy,
seriously,
car.
Yeah. That dude could be working on fucking engines and shit. Just no tools.
Tearing phone booth books in half and shit.
To be fair, this feels like, I mean, how many actors have done these kind of movies before?
It's just like Angelina Jolie doing her.
Just like her. I mean, a decade ago, we had Bill Paxton do that Greatest Game Ever Played fucking golfing movie.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like a kind of a, yeah, like, I don't know, some, he wants to do something.
Why
they
is
never
it
pick anything big? They always pick something emotional slash.
I would say I opposite. Know. Why do actors always, when they get their turn to direct, always want to do a period picture?
Well, that's what I'm saying. They,
I mean,
they
even
never
Eddie
pick
Murphy
a
with
big
Harlem
movie
Nights.
Like a, they never pick like a big Hollywood movie. They always try to do something that's going to be artistic, right?
Period piece.
A period piece is easily artistic, maybe because even more so because they don't have to do any of the artistic stuff that has shit to do with the period, right?
I'm going to have to compile a list here because I'm going to list this. I'm thinking about it. I mean, you got Eddie Murphy with Harlem Nights. You got Kevin Costner with Dances with Wolves. These actors.
Well, Bill Paxton, yeah.
Right? I mean,
I'm Angelina Jolie, you're right, with the one she just did.
And I'm saying directorial debuts. So, I mean, Mel Gibson did a period piece, but I don't know if his – first one, I mean, what was his first one? Was it Man with the Two Faces? Because
that's not a period piece.
No, but Forever Young is a period piece. If he directed that, I can't recall. I'm gonna have to look that up. But regardless, you know, a lot of directors when they get their chance, actor turned director, do period pieces for whatever reason. They get this grandiose idea. I mean, Van Damme.
Yeah,
the
Man
Quest.
Without a Face was his thing. That's not a period piece. Well, but his, to be fair, his second thing was Braveheart. So, I mean, Mel Gibson's obviously a period lover. Passion of the Christ, Apocalypto, right?
Nobody loves the period. Okay, boy. Don't lie to me. I'm not your
they
girlfriend.
Do. They love it. When menopause comes around, Mel Gibson just got angry.
He got real angry. One of the angrier ones. Although I'd like to see him in more stuff because... he's good on screen, man. Good on screen. That's another thing. This is HBO documentary that's coming out this week, this Going Clear, which is very critical of Scientology and particularly Cruz and Travolta and their role in stuff within the
crazy.
Church.
Right.
You think that stirs up things once again and it maybe affects Mission Impossible?
No. You mean like people not going?
Yeah, because for a while I mean, he really, you know, the jumping on the couch phase, look at the gross for
part
three.
All done. That's so far gone at this point. I don't know if he would make that mistake again.
He survived it, yeah.
Well, she also, you know, escaped, so.
He survived the fallout, honestly. It's pretty impressive that throughout that whole time he just continued to work, and his movies were solid as shit during that, I mean, box office-wise. Nothing outstanding, but solid, especially when you look
because
at
that. Because he's not like
Smith
that the whole time, you know? I mean, we've heard interviews, we've read people who have met him and this and that, and he's a very nice guy. He's not crazy, really. He's like Mel Gibson probably really isn't crazy, you know, all the time. He's got anger management issues. Sure, but that doesn't make him angry all the time, right?
My girl likes to angry all the time. I don't know. I like the fact that I like to picture Mel Gibson angry all the time, like angry at breakfast.
He
wakes
I'm
up.
Sure, that's exactly what he's the most angry at.
Hard all day long. I think it late at night. You catch that motherfucker passing.
I know that
midnight.
Mel Gibson's for sure eats like, you know, hash browns, two eggs sunny side up, two bacons, two sausage. Like that man eats a man sized breakfast. You know.
When
it.
You said that, I got it like the image of Raging Bull with him getting kissed and his eggs aren't done right and slamming
exactly.
the plate against the wall. You want to make these eggs runny?
That is exactly.
Eat the fucking eggs. I mean, yeah, pastrami sandwich for lunch, if not a French dip. I mean, he's getting his calories in, we could say.
Oh, boy.
Well, that's going to wrap up our show tonight on episode 269. It was a wild one. It was a little upside down and backwards, if you know what I mean. But continue to follow us on Twitter, Stitcher, Facebook, iTunes, wherever else we can be followed at. Just don't follow us in person because that would just be fucking weird. What else do you want to plug? Anything else to plug in nowadays?
Good God, no.
We're giving away Interstellar on a Blu-ray DVD. Get over to Movie Mavericks, get in the contest.
Over.
It's not over yet. Is it over?
No,
it's going to the
Tuesday,
end of the month.
Right?
Yeah, it's almost over.
That's what I mean. It's almost over.
It's almost over. So if you're listening to this past Tuesday, it's over. If not, and you've gotten this far, we salute you. Please continue to listen.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we're really selling it tonight. All right, I think that wraps it up. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Ruger. We are the Movie Mavericks. Talk to you soon.
Oh, my. Another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com, Warp 9. Engage!